Hey, welcome to the Growth Dummy summary of the book The Black Swan by Nassim Nicholas Taleb. The Black Swan helps us better understand unpredictable extreme events like the 9/11 attacks, rise of the internet, and stock market crashes. Nassim Taleb says we are unprepared for the next big event like this because we rely too much on incomplete theories, limited models, and flimsy historical narratives. Our top quote from this book is, "Years ago, I noticed one thing about economics, and that is that economists didn't get anything right," end quote. So who is Nassim Nicholas Taleb and why listen to him? Well, he's an author and a scholar. He used to be a financial trader, too. He's also been a professor at several universities, including right now being professor of risk engineering at New York University. He offers a new perspective for how we can deal with randomness, risk, and uncertainty in our lives. Near the end of his studies, Nassim Taleb went to the prestigious Wharton Business School in Pennsylvania, where he listened to distinguished professors and top executives from big companies. Afterwards, he worked for an investment firm in Manhattan, where he worked alongside many big professional traders. And he was surprised to find that none of those people really know what's going on. The economists at the world's best universities can't predict where the market will go, even with all their fancy models. And the professional investors, they can't predict stock prices at all. They didn't even seem to realize the massive risks they were taking every day, all while acting like they were being conservative. Taleb knew an extreme and unpredictable event would happen. He just didn't know when it would happen, but he created a financial strategy to prepare for it. And sure enough, less than 5 years after he graduated, in 1987, the stock market had the biggest drop in history. Pretty much no economist or risk manager had predicted it, and the crash didn't even have any clear cause, which must have been all the more distressing to them. Yet on that day in 1987, when everyone on Wall Street was in despair, Taleb says he slept like a baby because he'd made enough money to be set for life. And from then on, he was mostly free to focus on his study and writing. And it was all thanks to his preparation for these big, unpredictable events. By the way, another famous graduate of Wharton Business School is Donald Trump. In his book, The Art of the Deal, he also didn't seem very impressed by his professors either, saying, "Perhaps the most important thing I learned at Wharton was not to be overly impressed by academic credentials," end quote. If you want to hear more of Trump's stories from the business world, then go read our summary of The Art of the Deal by Donald Trump. So our first lesson from this book is black swan events are unprecedented, have a huge impact, but are later explained away as being predictable. Here's another quote. "History and societies do not crawl. They make jumps. They go from fracture to fracture with a few vibrations in between. Yet we and historians like to believe in the predictable, small, incremental progression," end quote. So for most of history, people only saw white swans. Everyone knew that black swans didn't exist, so back then, calling something a black swan used to mean it was an impossible thing. But then in 1697, something totally unexpected happened. Some European explorers walking across Western Australia saw a living, breathing black swan, and they were stunned. And later on, philosophers like John Stuart Mill began using the black swan as a metaphor to talk about events which are totally unpredictable based on past evidence. Nassim Taleb took this idea one step further, and he describes an event as a black swan event when, number one, it is totally unexpected, and number two, it has a huge impact in the world, and number three, people later give convincing explanations for why it happened. Black swan events include World War II, the market crash of 1987, and other market crashes, the spread of the internet, the 9/11 Trade Center bombings, the discovery of antibiotics, and many more. Nassim Taleb was shocked by a black swan event early in his life. You see, he grew up in Lebanon. It's a country on the Mediterranean, which has about half Christian and half Muslim population. Now, there had been peace in Lebanon for 1,300 years. And in school, kids were always taught about how uniquely civilized and tolerant their culture was compared to many other countries nearby who were often engaged in wars. But then when Taleb was a teenager, the unthinkable happened. A bloody civil war broke out between the Christians and Muslims in the country. Bullets and bombs exploded in residential areas, and all of the society was just ripped apart by this. Now, the adults that Taleb knew, they told him endless times that the war would be over in a few days. They constantly were saying this, yet it lasted almost 17 years. He noticed that most people around him couldn't predict anything about the war, but after the fact, they could always provide great explanations for why it all happened. And the smarter and more educated someone was, the more logical their explanation sounded. Later in life, Taleb realized that history is dominated by those kinds of unpredictable events that have a huge impact. In fact, just in that area around Lebanon, many black swan events had happened in the past. A couple thousand years ago, Christianity had spread across the world. Today, we all see Christianity as a fact of life, but it began as a totally insignificant cult, barely mentioned by historians at the time. In a different nearby area, 500 years ago, Islam's spread was even more blistering and unpredictable. So, a summary of this first lesson: a black swan used to mean something impossible until one day people discovered they actually existed. Now, black swan is a term for events which are unprecedented, they have a huge impact, and yet most people later claim to know why they happened. Now we have lesson two. More and more we live in extremistan, which is an unequal world with unpredictable extreme outliers. Taleb says we live in two separate worlds, mediocristan and extremistan. Mediocristan is the world humans came from, where things are more equal and similar. It's the natural world, the world that our intuitions were designed for. Human height fits in this world. I mean, imagine 50 random people. Some of them may be a couple feet taller or shorter than the average, but it's a relatively small difference. A few more examples of things that exist in the world of mediocristan could be the weight of animals or plants, the grades that people get in school, and the salaries in conventional jobs like welding, retail, medicine, etc. So, on the other hand, extremistan is the world that we are moving into, where extreme outliers can have a huge disproportionate impact. It can be hard to wrap our minds around extremistan. Human wealth fits into this world. Imagine 50 people again, but this time we're comparing their wealth, and one of them happens to be a billionaire. Well, the billionaire can easily have more money than the other 49 people combined. On the other hand, no person will ever be taller than 49 people combined. So that's the big difference between mediocristan and extremistan. In mediocristan, most things are quite similar. In extremistan, you can have these extreme variations. A few more examples of extremistan. Someone like Stephen King will sell more books than 1,000 other authors combined. A Picasso painting will sell for 1,000 times more money than a painting from an unknown artist. A startup like Uber is more valuable than 1,000 other tech startups combined, and so on. Here's a quote from the book. Mediocristan is where we must endure the tyranny of the collective, the routine, the obvious, and the predicted. Extremistan is where we are subjected to the tyranny of the singular, the accidental, the unseen, and the unpredicted. End quote. Nassim Taleb believes we are increasingly living in extremistan because of technology and global connectivity. This trend started hundreds of years ago and has only been accelerating with inventions like the printing press, television, and the internet. In fact, he almost sounds like he predicted the 2020 coronavirus pandemic in this next quote. Quote, "As we travel more on this planet, epidemics will be more acute. We will have a germ population dominated by a few numbers, and the successful killer will spread vastly more effectively. Cultural life will be dominated by fewer persons. We have fewer books per reader in English than in Italian. This includes bad books. Companies will be more uneven in size, and fads will be more acute." End quote. So, summary of this second lesson: Mediocristan is the world that we came from, where differences between individual things are relatively small, like in human height and weight. Extremistan is the world we're moving into, where outliers have an enormous impact, like human wealth or fame. Technology and globalization are speeding up this change. Now we have lesson three. We overvalue what we know and are blind to what we don't know. In 2002, the U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld was asked a question about the war in Iraq, and he famously answered, here's a quote, "There are known knowns, there are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns, that is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns, the ones we don't know. And if one looks throughout the history of our country and other free countries, it is the latter category that tends to be the difficult ones." And that was a quote from Donald Rumsfeld. Although this answer was at first made fun of by the press, it brought the idea of unknown unknowns into popular culture, and over time, has gained respect as a quote that succinctly expresses an important idea, which is the idea that we must often make important decisions with incomplete information while trying to take into account those invisible unknown unknowns. Imagine a turkey that's being raised on a farm. Every day, it gathers another piece of evidence that the farmer is a generous friend. And there's no evidence to the contrary for that. However, after hundreds of days of the turkey's increasing certainty of its safety, Thanksgiving comes. And on that day, as Taleb puts it, the turkey, quote, will incur a revision of belief, end quote. And this story, by the way, is one that Nassim Taleb borrowed from the philosopher Bertrand Russell. So the lesson here is, don't assume absence of evidence equals evidence of absence. Just like the Thanksgiving turkey, the 2008 housing crisis, and 9/11 terrorist attacks, events with enormous impact often happen without precedent. Here's a quote from the book. "Mistaking a naive observation of the past as something definitive or representative of the future is the one and only cause of our inability to understand the black swan," end quote. Taleb has another name for those unknown unknowns. He calls them silent evidence. We all have a hidden bias in how we gather information and data to support our beliefs. We focus far more on the evidence which is easily visible than on the silent evidence, which sometimes takes work to dig up. For example, there's something called survivorship bias, and that means we all tend to focus on the successful examples and individuals. So if you want to be successful, then obviously you would listen to successful people, and you would listen to the reasons they give for their success, like hard work and persistence. However, what about all those invisible people who never made it? They may have had just the same work ethic, but they maybe failed because of bad luck. But we never hear those stories of the people who didn't make it because, well, nobody wants to publicize their failures, and also their biographies were never sell enough to be published anyway. And by the way, Taleb says the best finance book he's ever read is called What I Learned Losing $1 Million, a book that teaches from the perspective of failure. But he also points out they had to self-publish that book. So how can we reduce our blindness to that silent evidence, the evidence that we can't see so easily? Well, we can invest energy into finding counterexamples. So, for example, don't just look at the examples of successful individuals, but look at all the individuals that started out in a given group. So don't just study the most successful business startup in your city, but also look at all the failed startups that were launched in the same year. Summary of this lesson, we underestimate the importance of what we are ignorant of, those unknown unknowns. Events often happen without warning or precedent, so don't assume an absence of evidence is proof of anything. Invest energy into shining light on silent evidence by looking at examples of, for example, failure, not only success. Now, lesson four. People create stories about why black swans happened, which covers up how unexpected they were. So remember that black swan events are unpredictable, they have a big impact, and also afterwards, people can always find a good narrative to explain why they happened. It's this last part of the definition that we'll explore now. You see, part of human nature seems that we love to tell stories and we love to find cause and effect patterns in the world, even where those patterns may not exist. Taleb calls this the narrative fallacy. Stories help us to simplify our worlds. We remember information a lot more easily when it's told as a story. On the other hand, we find it very hard to remember information that is random and disconnected. For example, most of us can watch a two-hour movie and then easily explain what happened to a friend, but it would be much more difficult for us to listen to a two-hour math lecture and then repeat all the math formulas that we just heard. Our education system relies on stories. Think back when you learned about World War II. The questions on your tests probably sounded like this. Why did the war start? Why did Hitler rise to power? Why did the Germans ultimately lose? But do we really know why all those things happened? Or are we just finding causes and effects that sound reasonable after the fact? Just because we can weave a convincing story after the fact, that doesn't mean we really know why something happened. In truth, things often happen randomly, or they have invisible causes, or they may have so many different causes that we won't ever figure it out. A turning point in Nassim Taleb's academic life was reading a book called Berlin Diary by the journalist William Shire. Shire wrote this book as he was living in Berlin from 1934 to 1941, and for a history book, it offers a unique perspective because all the entries are written as the events are taking place without the benefit of hindsight. From this book, Taleb saw the dramatic difference between historians who write about history after the fact versus people who experience it as it is happening. The Berlin Diary revealed the shocking fact that nobody expected World War II to happen, not even people living right in the middle of Germany or France. Most French people, for example, they fully believed Hitler would fade out quickly, which is why the country was so poorly prepared for the Nazi invasion. Yet in books written much later, historians often talk about the increasing tensions leading up to the war. In reality, it was a surprise to everyone. With narratives, we can easily trick ourselves into believing the world is more orderly and predictable than it really is. In fact, Taleb suspects people use narratives as a form of therapy. If something unexpected or shocking happens, then we can later piece together a story to explain why, so we feel more in control again. The problem is when we start to believe those stories about why past black swan events happened, that makes us blind to how unexpected they were. As a result, we become less prepared for the next big one. The more honest approach would be to admit we don't know. However, this is an answer many will find hard to accept. No teacher will accept that answer on a test, and no newspaper publisher is going to print an article about that. The bottom line here is we shouldn't rely on those narratives or theories that are created solely by looking backwards. Rather, we should make sure our knowledge proves itself with forward-looking predictions and with empirical testing. Here's a quote from the book. Prediction, not narration, is the real test of our understanding of the world. And another quote, the way to avoid the ills of the narrative fallacy is to favor experimentation over storytelling, experience over history, and clinical knowledge over theories. End quote. So, summary of this lesson, stories help us simplify the world, remember things more easily, and feel more in control of our future. However, they can create a false illusion of understanding and make us less prepared for the next black swan. It's better to admit we don't know and then to test our knowledge with empirical predictions. Lesson 5. Most experts mistakenly believe that risk can be contained within their models. Experts in business and statistics pretend like we're living in mediocristan. To forecast risk, they use tools like bell curves. In a bell curve, most things are around the average, and the more of an outlier something is, the less impactful it is assumed to be. However, those models completely ignore black swan events, which are the rare outliers to have a world-shaking impact. Nassim Taleb calls this over-reliance on limited models either tunneling or the ludic fallacy. And this problem is widespread among many social scientists, especially economists. When their models inevitably fail, the economists simply say the cause of the crash was outside their area of expertise. Then they continue using the failed models as if nothing happened. For example, Robert Merton Jr. and Myron Scholes both won the Swedish Bank Nobel Prize in Economics. In 1994, they helped open a large trading firm called Long Term Capital Management. They hired the smartest people in academia and used cutting-edge mathematical risk models, which gave many investors great confidence in the firm. And they had 3 years of success. Then in the fourth year, a financial crisis in Russia totally destroyed their company. To avoid a total economic collapse, the firm had to be bailed out by a collection of Wall Street banks and the Federal Reserve. So you might assume the theories and models of those economists were thrown out, right? Wrong. The universities still teach them, saying it's better to teach something that's right a lot of the time than teaching nothing at all. But Nassim Taleb says that is absolutely foolish. It is better to not forecast at all than to drive according to the wrong map. And he says it's irrelevant whether the models are right most of the time. The important thing is when the models are wrong, because black swan events have such a supersized impact. Here's a quote. "I have never had an outlook and have never made professional predictions, but at least I know that I cannot forecast, and a small number of people, those I care about, take that as an asset. There are those people who produce forecasts uncritically. When asked why they forecast, they answer, 'Well, that's what we are paid to do here. My suggestion, get another job.'" End quote. Later in the book, Taleb clarifies his position more and provides some rules to reduce your chance of catastrophic errors in forecasting. So here are his rules. Number one, if you must make a prediction, then at least forecast a range of outcomes that includes a wide margin of error. Number two, base your strategy not on what you predict will happen, but on the worst case scenario you can reasonably assume is possible. And three, finally, try to keep your forecasts as short-term and small-scale as you can. For example, it's a lot more reasonable to predict what your income will be in 2 years than what the global economy will look like in 10 years. Risk in real life is not clear-cut and sterile like the mathematical models taught in universities. It is fuzzy and indefinite. Intellectuals often forget that the limited and artificial maps that they create are not the world. They are not reality. Taleb calls that the mistake of Platonifying the world. He believes modern intellectuals, following in the footsteps of the philosopher Plato, have placed too much importance on those abstract forms and elegant theories. Here's a related book. So Robert Sapolsky is a professor of biology and neurology at Stanford, and he made a similar point in his book called Behave. He says scientists in different disciplines always interpret things according to the models they already know. For example, if you ask a scientist to explain a human behavior like aggression, then a biologist will talk about hormones, a psychologist will talk about mental patterns, and a sociologist will talk about cultural pressures. But Sapolsky believes that paying too much attention to one model or one category makes us lose sight of the big picture. That's why he always tries to explain human behaviors from many points of view at one time, including neurons, genes, hormones, childhood experiences, brain development, culture, and evolution. If that sounds interesting to you, then check out our summary of the book Behave by Robert Sapolsky. It's a very enlightening book. So, summary of this lesson: experts act as if their models work, even when they have failed countless times before. The models can take into account those outlier black swan events, which have a supersized impact. It is, in the end, better to not forecast than to drive according to a wrong map. Now we have lesson 6. A career in Mediocristan gives the appearance of stability, but hidden risk may be building up. Most people's careers exist in Mediocristan. For example, there's not a big difference between the highest paid and lowest paid workers in most fields. And at the beginning of your career, you are paid a stable weekly salary, and 40 years later, you might be making 1.5 or 2 times as much, which is not a dramatic change. However, careers in Mediocristan may not be nearly as safe or stable as most people assume. Just like that turkey that we talked about before Thanksgiving, people in Mediocristan may be totally unaware that their jobs could be becoming more and more precarious. For example, manufacturing workers in North America had some of the best jobs until most of those jobs and those companies suddenly went overseas, and the workers found themselves unemployed and totally unprepared for the modern job market after decades standing in one factory position. So Taleb's advice to those working in Mediocristan is to not overspecialize. Make sure your skills can transfer to other companies if necessary. Now contrast that situation to someone who is self-employed. A self-employed person, like a consultant, they may have constant volatility, which means they have months when they make a lot of money and months when they can't find new clients. However, that constant pressure, that exposure to low-level risk, will make them much more flexible to bigger market changes. Here's a quote: "Do not confuse absence of volatility with absence of risk," end quote. So, summary: someone working a conventional career with a predictable path appears to have a very stable job, yet that may be an illusion. A self-employed person is exposed to constant ups and downs, but that can make them more adaptable to the big changes. Lesson 7. A career in Extremistan could make you wealthy, but requires working for years with no sure payoff. In Extremistan, people may work hard for many, many years, making very little money or even no money, but they have the potential of a big payday in their future. A lot of creative people and entrepreneurs exist here, including artists, writers, musicians, startup founders, and self-employed people. So if one of those people creates a hit music album, a technological breakthrough, or the cure for cancer, then they could become obscenely wealthy. On the other hand, most of those people never get that huge payoff. So if you want to pursue a career in Extremistan, then you'll face some unique challenges. The first challenge is the human brain appears to be designed for steady and linear rewards. I mean, just imagine a caveman or woman looking through the forests for food. They're motivated by hunger, and then after a short time, they find some berries. Eating those berries provides many pleasurable sensations as a dopamine reward. A weekly paycheck follows a similar pattern. You spend a week working for a reliable reward that is coming in the near future, a short-term reward. On the other hand, if you're working in Extremistan, you could be working for years with no visible payoff, and that is the exact opposite of the environment that our minds were designed for, so it can be very discouraging. Also, people around you may shame you for not appearing to be a contributing member of society. And Nassim Taleb says, a lack of respect can be even more painful than not making money. So he says it's very important to find a like-minded group that can support you and is on a similar mission. He mentions how throughout history, most great philosophers, thinkers, and artists belong to some school of thought that they could find support and respect in. In summary, people working in extremistan include artists and entrepreneurs. There's a potential big payoff, but most people don't get there. To avoid being discouraged, find a group of like-minded people to find esteem in. Lesson 8. Entrepreneurs should rely on trial and error rather than top-down planning. Nassim Taleb is a big critic of top-down planning and says we need more bottom-up experimentation and trial and error to find what works. So if, for example, a medical treatment works, then doctors don't need to understand why it works right away. They just need to give the treatment. In the same way, if a business idea is profitable, then you don't need to know the theory behind why. You just need to find that idea, and the best way to do that is through trial and error. In 1998, Nassim Taleb worked at a European-owned financial firm. They wanted to appear very stable and serious, so they had five top managers creating a detailed five-year plan over the summer. But then the Russian financial crisis of 1998 happened, and just 1 month after finishing this fancy five-year plan, all five managers were not working at the firm anymore. Well, it turns out that reality didn't care about their plan. Taleb says the firm should have known better than to waste their time on that kind of a detailed plan. You see, their most profitable product had not been planned in advance, but had been discovered accidentally. One of their customers had requested a very specific service, and they later realized they could sell the same thing to other people. And that became, you know, the whole foundation of their success. Here's a quote from the book. The strategy for the discoverers and entrepreneurs is to rely less on top-down planning and focus on maximum tinkering and recognizing opportunities when they present themselves. So I disagree with the followers of Marx and those of Adam Smith. The reason free markets work is because they allow people to be lucky, thanks to aggressive trial and error, not by giving rewards or incentives for skill. The strategy is then to tinker as much as possible and try to collect as many black swan opportunities as you can, end quote. Probably the most often recommended book for aspiring entrepreneurs is called The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. In that book, he teaches to empirically test many small changes in your product so that you can find out what things your customers respond to. It's a method of scientifically testing to find the winning business strategy rather than relying on theories from experts. Eric Ries writes, quote, "What differentiates the success stories from the failures is that the successful entrepreneurs had the foresight, the ability, and the tools to discover which parts of their plans were working brilliantly and which were misguided and adapt their strategies accordingly," end quote. To learn about his method for launching successful startups, go read our summary of The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. So, in summary of this lesson, to find a successful business strategy, we should do less theoretical planning beforehand and much more trial and error and experimentation. And now lesson 9. Taleb's financial strategy was to be very conservative and very aggressive at the same time. Most investors like to have a nice balance of risk and return, not too risky so they lose money, but not entirely safe either because they want to grow their money too. Taleb used a very different approach. 90% of his money went into extremely safe investments like treasury bills. This way, if a black swan event happened, then this money would be safe. He views this almost like insurance. He can't predict what the next negative black swan will be or when it will happen, but the majority of his money will be as safe as possible. Now, the other 10% of his money went into very unsure bets, like towards venture capital firms that invest in new startups. Most of those bets will lose money, but if just one of them pays off, then there's the opportunity to become incredibly wealthy. Now, Taleb can't predict which specific company or investment will pay off, but in this way, he creates many opportunities for a positive black swan to enter his life. In summary, rather than seeking balance, Taleb put 90% of his money into extremely safe investments to protect himself from a negative black swan. The other 10% went into very risky investments to expose himself to the potential explosive payoff of a positive black swan. Okay, so we're finished this summary. I hope you enjoyed it. This was definitely one of the most thought-provoking books I've read recently, putting into question a lot of what we think we know about the world and how we can predict the future and what's going to happen. With recent events that have happened, like the 2008 financial crisis, 2016 election of Donald Trump, and the 2020 coronavirus pandemic, I feel like this book is more relevant than ever. And perhaps we are accelerating into the world of extremistan, so we'd better prepare. And I'll see you in the next book summary.